Hey, what's up, everyone? Today on the show, we have a very special guest, my good friend, Matthew Andrade, a truly amazing audio engineer that's been working with the stars for over a decade now. Artists like Luis Miguel, Vampire Weekend, The Neighborhood, and Steel Panther. And I'm very happy to have him over at stage right today. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing so good. Thank you for having me, both of you. I'm really happy to be here, man.
You sound like you're doing pretty good there, Lo. You sound a little high over there.
Oh, dude, you know how it is, man. It's my wedding anniversary.
I was just going to say, congratulations. I saw that this morning, man. That's awesome.
Thank you, baby.
To you,
yeah,
and you,
man. Yeah. 3 years. 3 years.
Goddamn.
That's the craziest, happiest times of my life.
That's what's up, man. You know, it's important, though, to celebrate these milestones as you guys go along, because obviously, you know, I'm sure there's been tons of ups and downs, like you just said. So it's really awesome that you guys have made it this far. And I feel like possibly you guys are stronger than you've ever been, no?
Dude, yeah. You ask the universe what she can do with 3 years, man, and she'll definitely show you, bro.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we've both gone through a lot. It's a lot of life in a short amount of time that we've lived, and we've lost friends. We've had some scary moments. And yeah, I mean, a lot of love. We moved across the country from California to Florida. Dude, I mean, yeah. It's been amazing. Crazy ride so far, man. And this year has been incredible just because, yeah, we've been able to actually spend time together and share more than we ever have before, you know.
Yeah.
It's like one of silver the, lining
one
of 2020.
Few silver linings. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So how you doing? Where are you calling in from?
I'm calling from California, baby. I'm from the Inland Empire out in Riverside right now. I've been, right after the whole thing hit back in March, I was living in Hollywood for a few years. I had a roommate there. I was staying at a room in her house that she had. And it worked out great because I was touring a lot, you know. So for 2020, man, actually 2019, I was working with Vampire Weekend most of the year and went really well. And then 2020, man, we had the whole year planned out already. I mean, it was going to be a good year, man. It was just enough gaps of time off where I was going to be able to just kind of maybe take little vacations here and there. And one of the, you know, one thing that was really cool that I had only experienced one other time before with another band was they had actually offered to put me on retainer for this year.
Oh, wow.
So that was going to be super helpful. And so, yeah, it was just 2020 was shaping up to be a great year, you know, obviously.
Nope. And, got him.
Yeah, exactly. But so when the pandemic hit, and before that, actually, I had planned on possibly moving out this way because I wanted to be closer to my family. And so before that, I actually planned is like, hey, you know what? Actually, I might move back out towards my parents, maybe crash with them for a little bit, because then I'll have time to go down to Mexico to visit my girl more often. And I won't, and I since I already had the whole year planned, I was going to just kind of had little gaps and I was just going to spend it here when I could and then be off forever during the other times. So when the whole quarantine thing happened, I think probably about a month or so into lockdown, I was like, man, I was in Hollywood. It was really a lot of craziness going on in Hollywood. A lot of people just felt like they were losing their shit down there. And it's way more concentrated in LA. And it's kind of giving me anxiety being in that area and everything. And I just wanted to kind of come out this way because it's way more open out here, way more low key. It's the suburbs, you know? And so after about a month, I moved out here just as temporarily. And obviously this thing has been dragging on. So I've just been kicking it. And I sort of just moved my stuff slowly into my parents' house. And I call them my roommates, though, you know, just for everyone out there.
Yeah. Of course.
Pretty cool roommates now. And they know what I like. We set our boundaries and stuff. So it's been nice.
Also, the burbs are nice, right? Because I did the same thing. Went from the city to the burbs. And it's nice as you get older.
Yeah. I'm in the burbs, baby. Miami's like 20 minutes away, man.
I'm closer than that. I'm 10 minutes out of the city, but still, it's nice and quiet and calm.
Chris, you're in Michigan?
Minneapolis. You got close.
Oh, Minneapolis. Okay, that's right. I was like, knew it's somewhere up there. Nice. So it's pretty chilly these days there, huh?
Yeah, dude. Just bought my dog a little coat, a little puppy coat. He looks dope as fuck.
Oh, yeah.
It's the sickest. Like
styling, man.
It's like an like an 80s color themed like little dog coat.
That's funny. What kind of dog is it?
It's a little Yorkie poo.
Oh, Yorkie poo, nice. I really loved though, like with during the whole pandemic and everything, how with the all the shelters and everything, you know, how people were just so like quick to start adopting animals, you know, and it like cleared out the shelters.
Dude, we couldn't adopt. We tried to adopt and the shelters were cleared. We went to a breeder to get them because we couldn't find a dog anywhere else. We were trying before the pandemic and then they just like the shelters emptied.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. So, I mean, I was happy about that, but I've known a few people that have kind of done this, have been through the same thing, you know, where they wanted to get a pet and they just couldn't because there was none available.
Which again, that's awesome. Yeah. That's so good. They're all going to good homes. Mm-hmm. And for anyone who hasn't seen, Stella got the dopest goggles I have ever seen for a dog. We'll post
on
our page.
Oh, I saw those when she's sticking out the
sick
window.
Dude, yeah, I need to get like one of those little motorcycles with a sidecar.
Yeah,
now.
Oh, perfect. That's so, because she's so chill about it. She's just like, it's cool.
It's cool, man. I driving's like a different experience now. Like, people stop and take a picture. I see people next to me like smiling and waving. And, yeah. Oh my God, that's so fucking cute. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, man.
Talk about a new experience for her. Shit. She's like, dang, Dad.
Yeah. Oh, she loves the
attention.
You
just blew my mind.
Man, so here at Stage Right,
yeah,
we like to ask this question to everybody. I think you know what's coming.
Lay it on me.
What's your bagel, Matt? What you put on it?
Oh, snap. So, of course, you know, I hit you up a couple weeks ago, just randomly we were talking, and I was like, you know what, man? You guys got me always thinking about this bagel stuff, because to be honest, I've been a huge bagel fan for my whole life, obviously, as most of us probably have, and it brought me back to my high school days when I, at lunchtime, there was a spot next to our school was called, I think it was called Lots of Bagels. I think that's what it was called. And go over there for breakfast or on break time or lunch. And I always had the one go-to bagel. And I've been thinking about this. It was always the plain bagel with the Swiss cheese melted on top. And then cut in half, toasted. And then the garden veggie cream cheese spread on top. Because I liked how the garden veggie has a little bit of the vegetables in it. So it has a little crunch to it. So it has that little texture. And that was my jam, man. I would get that. And it always have to be like extra cream cheese because it would always bug me when the ratio was off, you know, of cream cheese to bagel. And okay. So
I'm glad you brought that up because that's very important here.
It is, right?
Have you noticed, Carlos? People are getting fancy now. It's like a Top Chef judging right now. Like, the ratio's got to be just right. A little bit of crunch in there.
Oh, man. Bring it up.
It is, man.
It's getting serious.
It's a very, very important question here.
Yeah.
You want to lay it on how it is, man, because then... Say Matt comes over and I lay him a little fucking spread of cream cheese. It's horrible,
He's going to walk out the front door. He's going to leave.
Yeah. He's letting me know, yo, if you make a bagel for me, man, better throw the cream cheese
That's
on
right. And I know I got to be careful I come to your house, Chris, because, you know, you might try to throw some of that strawberry spread on there. I'm like, whoa, what's going on? You trying to trick me?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so it's always been that bagel of choice for me, man. And of course, I'm always down with the everything bagel. That's always a good way to go. But I think for me too, bagels, man. I used to get the Brugger's bagels. Is that what they're called in the packages?
No. Brugger's doesn't do anything outside of Minnesota. I don't think.
No, I forget what brand it was.
It's probably Thomas International, right?
Thomas. It had like the orange. It was like a...
Orange packaging.
Kind of. Thomas International.
Okay, that's what it was. So I used to get, you know, I used to get a pack of those, six pack, and I would, every morning I would make breakfast bagel sandwiches, man. That was my jam for a long time. You know, just egg and avocado and cheese. So, I mean, that's what I love about bagels is diversity. You know, you got bagel bites.
Ooh.
Right? Who doesn't love bagel bites? That was my jam, you know?
Oh, dude. Diversity and bagels.
Yeah,
that's
man.
Something I hadn't even reached. Thank you, man.
Hand in hand, man. Hand
it
in
is,
hand.
It is, right?
That's beautiful, baby. Yeah, man.
I think it brings a lot of people together, too. Obviously, through, you know, what you guys have been learning through this show is something that we could all connect to. And
it's a good icebreaker, you know?
Totally, man. Yeah. And I really loved how, I mean, listening to the first... you know, a few episodes, I felt like it really happened organically. Like, you guys didn't, like, plan. Like, let's figure out who loves what bagels. You know, you guys just started talking about it. And then it kind of became a thing. And I think that's what was kind of the beauty of it all. I mean, it makes this whole thing pretty cool, you know?
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
And real quick, one of the bagels I used to eat all the time for, like, a dessert was I would get the cinnamon razor bagels like Chris there, and I would toast them, and I would get butter, and then I would, and on the side I would make a blend of like cinnamon and sugar, you know, in a little bowl, mix it up, and then I'd sprinkle the cinnamon sugar on top of the cinnamon raisin bagel with the melted butter.
My jam, dude. You're doing a bagel churro right now.
Kind of, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I feel that. Damn. I didn't think about that before.
I like that. Oof.
That's nice.
I love it, man. I love it. Matt, how did you end up in this industry? How did you end up wanting to become an audio engineer?
Well, I think obviously for me, it started back when I was younger playing. I was just really into music. I started playing the sax in seventh grade. Then I kind of fell off that, but I was always just in love with music, listening to CDs all the time. I was living in Germany at the time, so my music selection was a little limited at times, you know? So we got things later over there too. So like months down the road compared to in the U.S. because I was in Germany because my dad was in the military, so I was an army brat growing up. And then over time, we moved back to the U.S. and my parents bought me my first bass guitar. I think I was like in 11th grade. And I was just really into playing bass. I was really into Flea. Flea was like my idol growing up, you know?
Yes.
I watched all his like little home videos. I don't remember. He had a home video with him and River Phoenix. Sat down, River Phoenix.
Yep.
I don't know, okay.
I've seen it.
Yeah, I used to watch that thing nonstop, man. And then, I a couple of buddies, we started playing in a band. We had like one song. We ended up playing at a high school talent show. Then right after high school, I met a friend in my senior year. He was in a band. And then he's like, hey, man, come join my band. So I started playing with his band. I played in bands for like 10 years. And it was always just the kind of artistic, musical side. I didn't really have much interest in the production aspect or really understood what that whole thing entailed. So once I was in bands for like 10 years, my band eventually broke up. I was sort of dabbling in other avenues, like managing my friend's band, booking shows for them, stuff like that. And then that band eventually broke up. And I had a couple buddies, Joey, he was actually on one of my guests on my podcast. He ended up going to the Conservatory of Recording Arts in Arizona to go to school there. And that was like in 2005 and or six, I think it was. And I was like super inspired, man. Cause at that point I was kind of up in the air about what I wanted to do. I was just working a bartending job. I wasn't playing music. I was kind of at that crossroads point in my life. I was like 28 years old, you know, it's like, okay, what am I going to do next? Saw my buddies go to the recording school and I was like, man, that seems awesome. I want to know what's more about that. And then through another buddy, I started researching the Los Angeles Recording School out here in LA. And then I was like, you know what, man? I think this is what I want to kind of pursue. I don't really know if I'm going to be good at it or what really it entails, but I'm just going to take the risk and just go for it. So I did and moved out here in 2006. Started going to recording school like a month later. That was like a 10-month program. In the midst of all that, I started working at the interning at the Whiskey A Go-Go there in Hollywood. And yeah, man, it just kind of steamrolled from there. I was really lucky because when I first moved out here, one of my cousins, he was good friends with the owner of the Rainbow Bar and Grill on the Sunset Strip. And he got me a job being a daytime server, a lunchtime server at the Rainbow. And I'm not sure if most people know, but the owners of the Rainbow owned the Whiskey A Go-Go as well. So they knew I was in school and they're like, hey, and I actually quit serving when I started going to school. So they're like, hey, man, if you ever want to intern at the Whiskey, you know, whenever you're ready, let us know. So that's what I did. I think it was like a few months down the road into school. I was like, you know, I think I'm ready to kind of put some of the stuff I'm learning and put into action. And that's kind of where it all started for me, man. And like I said, it was a lot of fun, crazy learning experience. And I'm grateful for starting there and kind of coming up in the LA scene like that.
Dude, that's beautiful, man.
Yeah.
There are so many venues down there with so much history, man. I'm always stoked to do a show in LA.
Yeah, yeah.
Fuck, I mean, the Greek, the Wiltern, the Fonda, El Rey.
Dude, La Fonda was one of my first venues in LA, actually. Was it?
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, that's what's cool about LA, man. I feel like there's always, like, obviously before COVID, but there was always something going on every night. You could go, you know, you could go to a million different venues and have a million different experiences. It was so cool. And I really appreciate that and miss that about LA right now. And it's kind of bums me out to think about some of these places might not make it through this, you know? And it's really going to change the musical landscape of this community and this the music scene in general. And
the world, frankly.
The world, yeah, exactly, man. Yeah.
As long as First Ave stays open, I'm good.
There you go.
If that goes down, I'm going to cry.
Oh, yeah. That, I mean, that should almost be like a landmark, like some of these places.
Yeah.
Exactly. Should be, totally, right?
Do you have a favorite LA venue?
And let's go favorite venue, too, like just in general.
Okay. Well, in LA, I love the Roxy, man. I fucking love the Roxy. I mean, as for like a club, for getting like a higher level band and to get like the intimate feel, that's the way to go. That place is probably one of my favorite places to work, to play. I've never played there, but just to work and to see shows there, it's always fun. And then I also love, I mean, I love the Greek a lot as well, as far as like an outdoor venue. That's really cool.
That catering is just
It's amazing, right? Yeah. I mean, I even love the Hollywood Bowl, to be honest with you. I mean, those both kind of go hand in hand. It just depends on what artist you're working with. And that was really cool when I got to actually finally work there back in 2018, because I'd only seen shows there. And it's crazy because it's such an intense sound limit there that sometimes you'd think it wouldn't sound good. But man, some of the best shows I've heard are at the Hollywood Bowl, you know, because it's not like it's not overbearing or anything. It's just at that right level where you can kind of feel it and be comfortable and enjoy it, you know? So, and one venue that I would say that most people probably don't think about that I would highly recommend to see any sort of show there would be the Walt Disney Concert Hall.
Dude, I got to mix there one time.
Really?
For La Santa Cecilia,
amazing, man.
That place is beautiful, dude. And what sound, man.
Yeah, because it's naturally treated. And when I saw the show there, it was like a choir. It was the Soweta African Choir. So they just, and I remember it was just like one cluster of speakers in the middle of the room, and everything. And that's and it was tripping me out how clear everything was, and how audible it all was. And I was kind of like higher up too, you know. So I wish I could see more. I wish I could experience more shows there because that really blew me away.
Those center clusters really work well. There's one, I think 930 owns it in D.C. It's like a historic theater, so they couldn't put points on stage left or right. So they had one center cluster of, I think, D&B. It sounded incredible. Right? There's no phasing, nothing like that. And with the coverage of new boxes, it just fills the whole room so well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it just gives you that separation, too, where you can just really put vocals and maybe a couple other key things in that center cluster and then clean everything else up to the sides.
All right, so moving on, I want to ask... Just okay. One answer. Worst venue you've worked at.
I want to say one of them. I don't remember the name of the club, but it was in Joliet, Illinois. I forgot what it was. But it was, we didn't have the proper risers. So our production manager had their hands build us extensions for the riser. You know, and they were just, it was just like, and like the kitchen, you had to go through the kitchen to load it, and it was all flooded in the kitchen. And I remember there was broken glass, and one of the opening bands, like their merch guy, he slipped on the water and cut his foot open on the glass on the stairs. Like, and then and that night, the owner, he was being super rude, and he was kind of like trying to shortchange us or something on the payout, or like, I don't remember the details, but I remember like not ever wanting to go back to that club again. And then I don't want to hate on it too much, but it's not like my favorite place to play either. But when we have to play the Upstate Music Hall in New York, in Rochester, New York, I think that's where it's at, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Upstate Music Hall. It's like a strip mall venue. You know, low ceilings. So like those two kind of stand out to me where I'm like, I prefer not to play those places anymore.
I'm okay if I never go through there again. Yeah.
I'm not sure if I've asked you, Los, what is your least favorite venue? I know mine, I think.
I think, sorry to cut you off, Los, but I think some of that has to do a little bit with when you make those ratings and those judgment calls, it's like the load in and load out. I think that has a big factor to do with the venue and how your day goes and how you feel about the venue, you know? So I think.
I mean, for me, it's Ace of Spades in Sacramento. That place is a nightmare. They have that horrible Bose rig and there's no stage
it's
space.
It's crazy how many people put that Bose rig up too.
That one sucks, dude, especially as a monitor engineer.
But it's a great area and there's lots of really fun bars around. We always rage in Sacramento.
Shady lady.
Yep, a shady lady.
And Kicksville, USA, amazing record store. Yeah, awesome. Huge Beatles fan, the owner.
Dude,
my least favorite venue. There's a place called Launchpad in New Mexico. I haven't been there in a long time, but I remember just not...
I know Launchpad, yeah.
...digging that place at all. Mm-hmm.
Another shout-out like that is... I love this venue, but the Rave. That's a bad loading.
I thought about that too, yeah.
Yeah, Rave, and yeah. It gets so... I remember one of our buddies from the movement fell down the stairs because there's no AC. It was a hot summer day. There was so much condensation after the show. The stairs are just completely slick. Yeah, and their elevator has no doors on it. They leave it wide open, and the shaft just goes straight down. So if you tripped, you're just going to like drop down 30 feet.
Scary. Have you guys been to the Aztec in San Antonio?
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. Like when you're talking about their a whole like real quick, like last time I was there, they had like where I was sitting on my monitor world, they had a hole in the, and on the stage where they go down underneath and the, and it was on stage left and it was open and I saw it was open and I was trying to, you know, I knew I was like, all right, Matt, be careful. You're setting up your world. You're, you know, and I lost track of where I was stepping for a second and I stepped right into the hole. Luckily I caught myself with my arms, but it was like another 12 feet drop down in that thing. And I got like, I saw my life flash before my eyes. Like, oh
man.
Cause I didn't know what happened. It was just like, boom, happened so fast. And then, yeah. So I was like, oh gosh. So I just want to say it to everyone. I could be a little accident prone sometimes when I'm on tour. You know, I've had my fair share of
I've got a story to follow that up with too. Actually, I was once on stage with Iration, I think my first summer tour, and I was like really doing a quick changeover at a festival, big, tall, like 10-foot stage. I was walking on the front, plugging pedal boards in, and my foot just slipped and landed on a big Socko cable, and it just rolled. And I fell off the front of the stage in front of like 10,000 people.
Shit.
And I like heard people in the crowd go, and my glasses fell off. And I just like kind of walked back up on stage and like started doing stuff. And the security guard handed me my glasses from like down in the pit.
That's hilarious.
Like,
dude.
Fuck, this
Holy
sucks.
Shit, dude.
Still made the changeover though.
It's because you're a pro.
Yeah.
That's how we do. Man.
Have you ever been hurt on tour, Los?
I've never been hurt too bad on tour. The last one I can remember that was pretty bad was like a New Year's show with the Expendables, and we were at St. Rock and fuck, where is that? Hermosa Beach? Yeah. And dude, it, like, great show, great set. Guys finished playing. I bring house music down. People are leaving. I pack my shit up. I run to stage to start packing up. But instead of going to the side and walking up the stage, I decide to just kind of like push myself up. And I landed the corner of that stage as sharp as fuck for some reason. And I landed my shin basically on that corner. And the stage manager saw it and she was just kind of like, wow, I'm going to give him a minute. And then she came over and was like, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, just need a minute. Because, dude, it was one of those moments where like everything just went black. And I still have a scar from it. Yeah. Like it fucking hurt. And it took a while to heal. But
damn. There's another time, Los, that you might be forgetting that you got hurt on tour.
Like emotionally or?
No, it was physical. It was physical.
Physical on tour. Oh, yeah.
Chris is like, uh-huh. Uh-huh.
It's the same one.
We were with, well, there was two times. Yeah, we were with Iration. And there was one time, where were we? In like Montana. And then me and the front of house guy, Peeps.
It was Missoula. Yeah.
In Missoula. Just started like wrestling in the snow. Peeps just kind of like took me down and then we took it far.
Oh, shit.
There was two times that day, though, because also we have a lighting guy, Lenny, who's like 6 foot something, like 200 and a million pounds.
He's like 6'2".
And yeah, and Peepers and Carlos tried to take him down, but for some reason tried to go from his neck to pull him down.
The physics were wrong.
Oh, yeah.
And Lenny just took his 100-pound arm and just like shoved both of them, just like clear across the front lounge of the bus.
If you've ever been in a front lounge... That was the distance that I flew from basically where the bathroom is until like the beginning of the couch where the cooler is.
It's
in the
like
corner.
A good 12, 15 feet possibly, you know?
Yeah. And that was the night after me and Peeps wrestled in the snow earlier. So the next day I woke up and I was like, man, my back hurts. What happened?
Yeah, exactly. Let's replay the tape.
Good day off. That was a good day off, man.
That's funny.
Then Peepers lost his phone in the snow.
Yeah, and then mine got wet in the snow and died like 2 weeks later on tour.
Oh, shit.
That was fun. All because of that day. Good times.
Memories.
Damn, that's crazy. Memories. Yeah.
I have a...
Dude. Okay, what about worst experience on a show ever?
Worst. Oh.
Go, Chris.
Yeah, Chris.
Me?
Go.
Yeah. All right, so I'm not going to do one that's my fault because that's not very fun. But my worst ever show experience, I think, was we were... Carlos was off Irations tour for a little while, and we had a monitor girl named Kristen. And we had a brand new Midas Pro 2C on the road. We'd had it maybe a month or something. And we were just finishing a sound check. The band was doing their VIP meet and greet right in front of the stage. And I was doing one last tweak on the acoustic guitar up by the monitors. And suddenly, the console just fried. The DSP chip failed. So it was full digital feedback across every single channel at full blast. With massive, this is a big venue too, with like huge side fills. We had like six monitors up. And I almost shit my pants. Like,
everyone probably did.
The loudest things. And the poor VIP people are up there just going, what the fuck is happening? Oh, and it was a pretty tight stage, right? So Kristen had to like run around the console, go back to the rack and start yanking out all of her outputs. Just just to stop it. It was bad.
I mean, I've had something similar to that happen, you know, over my few years, but I think for me, it has to go back to like my beginning of touring. It was probably like around 2013. And I had just started with Steel Panther like a few months before. We did a few tours when we did like Australian tour, we did a European tour. So I was feeling pretty good about like, you know, my position and what I was
getting comfortable.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, all right, I got this. So the next year rolls around and April starts and a festival season starting, you know? So we're about to do a US tour like in April and hitting all the festivals along the way. And the first show on the run was a festival, no pre-production, all new gear, two new techs. And we are doing, what's that festival? It's in Jacksonville, Earth Day Birthday. It's in Orlando, actually. Yeah, yeah. And so we're Steel Panther. And this is like when they first started, like really starting to tour again or to begin with. And so they're hyped on all the festivals we're playing. Like everyone's hyped on Steel Panther. Like side stages on both sides are just full of people wanting to see the show. So we're doing this first show and like Stone Sour's there and all of our management's there. And this is one of those situations where I felt a little overwhelmed and a little over my head, but I didn't want to say that to no one. And I just knew I was like, I had to figure this out. Because like I said, we got all this gear from Claire and the rack was this sort of, this is my first time dealing with all this sort of thing, you know, putting together my own racks, having my own system, all this stuff. I was using house desks on this run. So on this first show was a PM5D. I didn't have a show file. We didn't know pre-production. I wasn't too comfortable on a 5D. I don't know how I could have thought that I would be able to pull it off like that, looking back on now. So anyways, time comes, changeover. I'm not really sure how to prioritize my time. You know, I'm running around, like trying not to flip out. Showtime comes, changeover is already gone. Management's there on stage, like, and they're like, all right, guys, we gotta go. Band's on side stage. We don't have guitars mic'd up. I'm trying to get clean frequencies on the vocal mics. Their ears, I'm trying to get their ears right, their in-ears. All these things are coming into play. They're like, you guys got to go. So the band goes on, first song plays. There's no tracks. There's no guitars in the PA. And I've never wanted to like just crawl up in a ball or just run away. You know, like, and this is like my first like festival. So I have management, both managers there on both sides of me, like, what's going on? Why blah, 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 blah. And I'm just like sweating bullets, like, oh my God. And I don't really remember at the time. I feel like I kind of blacked out and I was just sort of in survival mode at that point. But our drum tech, and like I said, we had a new drum tech and a new guitar tech, and they're both seasoned veterans. And they were pissed that we didn't do any pre-production and that that management put us in this position, you know? So
absolutely,
yeah, man. So it was really, really tough. But I mean, obviously, we got through it, and I pulled it off. And the band, they were like, they weren't mad at me. They were upset with like that we got put in this position, you know, that the management didn't take the proper measures to, you know, set us up to succeed right off the bat. And so
yeah, it's setting you up for failure almost.
Yeah, yeah. So the PM took a hard hit on that. He took a lot of that blame. But that was definitely like, welcome to touring, Matt. Welcome to the festival season. You know, you have to step it up. You can't be so passive. You have to be more assertive. And it's all those lessons I feel like I learned in that moment, man. It was like I jumped into the deep end and I was drowning hardcore. But the next day we had a day off and the drum tech, he's like, we went out to the trailer. We just kind of were catching up. And he's like, man, I don't think I've ever seen anyone be under that amount of pressure, be so calm. And I was like, really? Because I felt like I was freaking out. And like I said, I felt like I wanted to cry. I felt like I just had never had that feeling of just wanting to run away far and just like just so overwhelmed. You don't know what to do with yourself, you know? And like, and that was the first of many, I will say, you know, it got easier as it went along, but that was definitely the hardest, man. And that was one that I will never, ever forget. And one of the biggest and hardest lessons I ever had to learn in this industry. So
I think we've all had those festivals though. Cause I know we had one where like they mispatched everything and the show went on with no guitars, no bass, one vocal in the PA. Yeah. It happens.
Yeah, I think my worst one was at a festival too, obviously. And it was when I was mixing front of house for Stick Figure and we were doing Cali Roots. I think it was their first time at the Bowl, you know, the main stage. And they had a surprise guest that nobody told me about. And
love that.
Basically, Collie Buds came on stage to sing with Stick. And I couldn't find the input for like less than a minute. But
yeah.
You know how that goes. Those 30 seconds.
That's a long time in the live sound
30
world.
Seconds are just like
a lifetime.
They seem eternal, dude. Like time just completely slows down. And that, like, it's like karate, man. Karate kick.
Exactly.
On the outside, not freaking out. But inside, wow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, one of those moments just nerve-wracking. And it taught me that lesson to like double check on inputs even like 5 minutes before the set. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's just one of those things that hopefully you take that as a lesson and run with it so it never happens again.
Because I guarantee you'll be put in that same situation again. It's just up to you at this point that you'll be able to handle it.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah, because then you ask and they're like, oh yeah, I forgot to tell you, my bad. So-and-so is coming on tonight.
It's funny, right now I hope to be in that position.
Exactly, right?
Because I miss having it. Like,
what I would give to feel like I just need to run away because everything's going wrong.
Right.
For real, man.
I mean,
to be honest too, it's a little tough now seeing, you know, a lot of my colleagues start getting some work, you know, especially with like the live streams and drive-in theater shows. And it kind of like bums me out a little bit at times. Like, man, I want to get behind a desk, you know, like, but it's just one of those things. I guess it just depends on the artist you're working with and kind of what their plans are moving forward. And
where you live too, because for me, Minneapolis, there's just nothing. If I was in LA, maybe there'd be more work, but someone has to fly me out to every single show pretty much, you know?
Yeah, man, it's one of those things that we hopefully start seeing more of. Mm-hmm. I feel the same way, bro. I want to mix. I want to just get behind that desk and see Chris, see, you know, the whole crew.
See the boys.
See the boys, yeah, man. And be in front of some music again and all that good stuff, you know?
Oh, yeah. But yeah, man, it's one of those things where, like, I'm just sort of feeling it out now, trying to keep myself occupied. Obviously, like you guys are doing with the podcast, I got my own show going on. That's really kind of keeping the creative juices flowing, keeping me, like I said, keeping me occupied. But I would really love to get back out there and make myself available to anyone who might need help with anything, whether it just be like in somewhere in town or I don't know, I guess anywhere else. I guess there's some other things that kind of come into play with that as far as like safety concerns and stuff like that. But I mean, I'm pretty much open to anything at this point because I mean, I love working. I miss working. I miss seeing my friends and colleagues and just sharing that experience with everyone. So.
It's amazing how much these podcasts help too. Like, cause I think we all forget how important it is for us just to talk shop with people in our industry. Cause we don't get to do that anymore. This podcast has been a super, like a godsend just to be able to have those conversations again. Like you're back in the back lounge of a bus or sitting side stage before the show starts, you know?
Yeah. Shout out to the Dirty Decibel.
That's what's up.
Go listen to that on Spotify or Apple Podcasts.
Yeah, yeah.
And go hire
That's
Matt.
Right.
Yes.
That's right. I put on all my accounts, you know, available for work. So that's what's cool too, you know, with LinkedIn especially, I've noticed, I've actually applied for a few different gigs, but I having to do with like sort of podcasts and stuff like that, because I think that's a great avenue to sort of adventure into, because it's obviously it's becoming way more relevant now. And, you know, it's become a bigger part of the market, and just more opportunities I think are coming from this. And I think people really are clinging to this and just find some sort of joy or comfort or, you know, just anything that they are looking for through podcasts, because there's all kinds, man. Anything that you're into, there's, if you have a fetish of podcast fetish, you know, it's out there. So,
yeah. True crime.
Yeah.
Murder mystery.
I do love the true crime.
Exactly. I think one of the best things is, though, is being able to connect and just stay in touch with your friends and colleagues. Because it's difficult, man. I was actually, you know, I did an episode the other day on my show, and it was a solo episode, and I was talking about, you know, just the situation that we're in the world as far as, you know, what relationships and human interaction has become. More or less, it's become more digital, you know, over the internet, especially over this past 8 months. And just my hope is that moving forward, that it doesn't continue to go down this path. Obviously it's nice right now, but you know, for our own well-being and everything moving forward, it's definitely important that we have human interaction, that we have those chances and that ability to, you know, interact on a human, physical, personal level. So yeah, 100%. Man,
I love that, man. You're fucking right. Yeah, I miss looking at people in the face and being able to see their face, not just like their eyes, and
giving the homie hugs and shit. I mean, I miss that a lot, man, you know?
Dude, right? And even stuff for me, like, am I going to go to my parents for Thanksgiving? I don't fucking know. You know, I have to think about that. It's a shitty consideration to have, you know?
I 100% agree, dude. Mm-hmm. And I miss it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, definitely.
Well, fuck. Let's lighten things up a bit. Let's keep it going happy. I got a question. So you guys are both monitor guys.
Yeah.
I want to have a little discussion about your individual workflows and how you function on stage, how you set up your worlds, and kind of that the general aspects of your job, workflow wise.
Cool, man. Yeah, man. I love that, because obviously it varies depending on the artist and the setup that you have, and the setup that the band has. So for me, typically, you get all the information, and then you figure out what, as a monitor engineer, what each artist needs and wants in their own mix, and then lay out my console based on that. Because that's, for me, that's a huge thing. Like, I could go onto any console and figure my way around, and I could pull up anyone else's show file and probably figure it out. But once I have my own, setup, it's very important, and it helps my ease of mind and my anxiety to lay it out in the way that it makes sense to me. And I think that's the biggest thing for any engineer, is to remember that and not try to fit a square peg into a round circle, you know? Understand, like, hey, I have a square peg and this is a round circle, but I'm going to, you know, maybe shave off here, shave off there, and I'm going to fit this square peg in this round circle. But because I know that it's set up the way I want it to be. And in that sense, it makes me more efficient, makes me quicker. It makes it easier for me to, like I said, reply to any requests that anyone's given me from stage. And then also, it just gives me less anxiety throughout the show and throughout the day, and gives me less to worry about. Because I guess it also, when you have an artist like with Vampire Weekend, I'm running like 90 plus inputs. And to be honest, when I first started work with them, I was a little overwhelmed. I was like, oh shit, because I stepped into that job taking over for another engineer. And so that was another thing that got added on top, was having to kind of win over the band, you know? And so I knew a lot of what that would entail is how I approached my workflow and how, like I said, quick I was to respond to them and how easy I made it for them. So that was my main focus when I started with Vampire Weekend, is to kind of take that angle and to keep that in mind and how I set everything up. And as well, it was really helpful when you, if and when the budget allows, and if you're a band with a band that allows this, to, is when you have a tech and you have someone who's there by your side to help kind of guide you and set you up.
Have another set of eyes.
Yeah, yeah. To kind of get you, to kind of put you in a position to succeed. Because for me, a lot of that comes with like little things like labeling your gear, how your world is set up in general, how much space you're taking, how things are wired together. Because like, let's say you get put into a festival situation, you want to be able to, especially if you're not the headliner, you want to be able to load in and load out as quickly as possible. And a lot of it has to do with how your rig is set up, you know? You kind of be shooting yourself foot. You sometimes you might be shooting yourself in the foot when you're not as contained or tidy, you know, when it comes to cable management, like I said, when it comes to label management, things like that. And I think for me over time, that's the biggest thing I've learned is just how to organize my workspace, my workflow, and everything that kind of entails into those. And I think that's kind of the way I approach it. And I hope that answered your question.
Well, I have one more too. So we haven't really talked about this ever, but I want to take you like even a further step back and talk about how you initially build your file. Like when you're just starting off a tour, like do you start with your channel labeling, your matrices? Do you have all your compressors and EQs built in before you walk onto the stage? Just talk a little bit about that process.
Yeah, well, typically, you know, I'll get an input list. And then if I have the ability, if I know what desk I'm using and I have the ability to work offline on my computer through some software, I'll kind of start there, just kind of labeling everything, getting it all my inputs labeled and put them in an order. Because I typically like to do drums, then guitars, then like keys or DIs or whatever, and then vocals, and then anything after that, like talkbacks or audience mics, stuff like that, anything extra. And also depending, I might make double inputs. Like for a vocal channel or acoustic guitar, depending on if I'm using ears or wedges. So I'll always take that in
consideration.
So take that in consideration. So once I get everything labeled, then like say for monitors compared to front house, let's say for monitors, I will, you know, then create my groups, my auxiliary outputs on my mixes, and then I'll label those. And then I personally, and it actually took me a few years before I started implementing this into my workflow, is I like to use VCAs when I mix monitors, mainly for the main artist, for the lead artist. So I'll set up my VCAs based on, once I figure out what the main artist will need throughout the show, like certain cues, any, you know, delays, effects, what is another thing I've used it for? Click. I've used it to like bring up click on the ears, just little things like that. I'll find that throughout my time working with the artist, that there's little things that they need or want throughout the show that I'll implement it into my workflow just to make it quicker. So once I get everything labeled and laid out the way I like it with inputs, outputs, VCAs, I'll probably high pass everything just ahead of time to like 100 hertz. You know, kind of set myself. I'll insert. I'll engage my inserts on my channels. That way, if I need to, activate a compressor or a gate or anything right away or EQ, it's already activated. Because like on a profile, DigiDesign profile, it's one of those things I had to learn the hard way where you're turning something up. Like, I'm not hearing it change, but it's not on. Yeah, you have to like actually physically like, boom, push the button in and you see it light up. So it was those little things I started to learn over time. Like, oh, okay, I want to make sure like all those things are engaged. That way I could be as quick and efficient as possible when the time comes to activate or engage anything. So I'll do that, you know, depending on the instruments. Like I said, I'll high pass things, all my vocals. I'll probably high pass them at 150 just to start off with, if not higher. And then I'll figure out what their mix is, what I'll do. And actually, I kind of had this approach, but I watched a video from my buddy Patty. He makes the monitors for Toto. He's a German engineer, awesome engineer. But I watched this video he did a couple months ago, and he does his mixes where he once I get everything labeled, you know, we're starting to do sound check. I'll start to gain up my inputs. I'll typically have my faders down, all my input faders down. Actually, all my input will be at zero. I'll have all my input sends down, and I'll gain up. You know, make sure it's at a nice level. Because obviously, for me and I guess most engineers, input and gain structure is the most important thing, and it's 100%. Crucial. It's the foundation, you know. And I've seen so many engineers, and I've taken over so many engineers' files, and I just seen how that is kind of looked over or is not considered to some degree, or they don't understand exactly how it works in the chain of things and how it affects how the things you do down the line are affecting gain structure at every stage you're doing, you know. So that's something you want to keep in mind, and I'm always trying to think about and remember when I'm start to add things, you know, to the mix or to the channels, stuff like that. So once I start bringing everything up, I'll get all my gains ready. Then I will basically, as just a starting point, I will take each output, each mix send, and then I will take the inputs and I'll put them at like minus 10 or minus 20. Boom, just straight across. And I might listen to their mix and I might adjust the mix just by a gain structure at first, you know, because that's how I kind of approached mixing front of house when I first started. All my input faders were at zero, and I mixed the show via my input gains. So I kind of take that approach, you know, just to try to get a level start, because obviously, like I said earlier, every musician artist is typical to their own mix and how they want to hear things. Some artists might not like drums or make, you know, there's all just to their own specific taste. So I try to get a basic general mix, to the way they could kind of hear everything, and then they could decide for themselves if they don't want to hear that or if they do want to hear more of that. And then also I'll have all my effects set up, you know. I'll make sure that I know that I have one vocal effect per person who's singing. I'll have one drum effect for all the drums, or if I'll have percussion separate, maybe I'll have a separate percussion effect, you know, and then effects for like acoustics or keys or anything like that, strings or any sort of thing like that. So that's kind of how I approach it. And I feel like it really basics, it's really simple and basic. And it just allows me to go into any situation and kind of come up with similar results in the sense that like I'm at a good starting point. So
that's what makes the show, I think, is those simple things that people overlook, like gain structure. You know, because if you overlook those simple things, you get super deep into trying to do all kinds of compression or whatever the fuck you want to do, and you just ruin your file so quickly doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you just dig yourself into a hole, basically. Yeah, it's one of those things that where it sounds like it's common sense, but it's not.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you mentioned high passes. Like, I think high pass filters are your best friend, especially for live sound. And I've taken over some files where it's almost like non-existent. And I'm just after getting a good gain, I feel like that's one of the first things that I do, like go straight to the high pass and, you know, go to like 80 or 100 and start there, depending on the instrument. Even on kicks and bass, like I'll go to like 30 or 40 just to clean up all that mess down there that flutters that low end up.
People forget how messy bass gets because everyone loves bass and I love bass too. But if you use it improperly, it just ruins anything, a system, a mix.
It just tines up the sound, man. Eliminate the frequencies that shouldn't be there. Same thing with low pass filters. Use those. Digital consoles, like there's no reason not to.
Yeah, because it could be, like you said, something simple. Like with the bass guitar, you're not using a high pass. It's muddy on the bottom end. And then you're having trouble getting the vocal on top. You know, and ultimately, the bass is probably, those frequencies are probably masking a lot of what you're trying to get out of the vocal. And all you got to do is high pass the bass up, and it clears up some of that. And then all of a sudden, your vocal pops out a little more. It's little things like that that maybe some people don't think about or understand the relation between everything that's in your mix and how they work together or against each other, depending on how you're affecting them or using them. So I think that's something to remember.
I think there's a weird stigma too with younger engineers who really want to hear a lot of bass, especially with today's current music. And they're really afraid to take away that bass. They don't want a thin sound. But a lot of some of the richest, thickest records, I think, are some of the older records, which do have a shitload of high pass, whether it's because of the recording process or how it was printed or how it was mixed. It makes everything sound better, and people are so scared of that, but they shouldn't be.
Yeah, you can still achieve a bump and thump and sound without muddying things up or overloading your in-ears or side fills or main, your PA.
Or your ears, frankly.
Yeah, man. I think especially with in-ears, it's a little tricky. And it could be a little deceiving at times because, especially with the new technology in in-ears these days, a lot of them, especially the ears that I use, which is JH Audio for a lot of my artists, they on the cables, they actually have like bass boosters on them. And when I took over Vampire Weekend, that was one thing I didn't check at first, you know, on all the ear, all the artists' ears. And I didn't realize it until later that, oh shit, they're all turned up. They're all turned up. And the singer, I was like, I was struggling. It's sort of the same thing. I was struggling getting his vocalist, or it just wasn't sitting right. And I was like, man, because with low end and in-ears for me, I feel like it's always too much when I feel the pressure on my ears. When I feel it physically, like boom, boom, pounding on my ears. It doesn't feel right. And it fatigues my ears very quickly. So I know that I don't want to feel that. And I'm assuming the artists will have the same experience as I do. And whether they realize it or not, they won't want that either, ultimately, because like I said, over time, it'll fatigue their ears. And then they'll get drained, not just their ears, but their overall vibe will start to drain because it all relates to it, you know, back to the ears. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was just one of those things where, I just try to be mindful of the low end and understand that and remember that there's different aspects of the different gear we use that they could be bass boosted. I think even on the in-ear packs, you have like EQ, like I've noticed there's no boost on it, but it's a flat or there's like a high pass on it, you know? And sometimes there's like a high end boost, you know? So there's all these little things within the gear that we use that we got to be mindful of and pay attention to.
That's one pro tip right there. If you're doing a fly-in date or starting a new tour and getting new packs as a monitor engineer, I go through every single one of them and make sure the specs are to the way that I want to set them up. Because that's one problem I ran into once a while ago that, I was getting these different feedbacks. And then I went through the packs and I was like, oh, yeah, the gains are different. And one of them had like an EQ and the other one had like a limiter. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, dude, that's a big tip, man. I feel like going through your packs and making sure all the information is correct and on your racks too.
Yeah.
I mean, that goes for anything on tour from guitar tech to monitor guy to front of house. Cause I've had that too with guitar packs or, you know, amps and stuff. Just always check all your settings, make sure it's right where you want it to be.
And every now and then, just give it a quick run through just to make sure everything still looks good.
Yeah. A quick story in kind of relation to that, sort of the same thing. Back in 2018, I was very grateful and very lucky to do like 4 shows with the Deftones in Europe. I got to fill in for monitors. It was like my dream come true, man, because they're like one of my favorite bands. But the tricky thing was is that the way that the shows were laid out is that we had to have 2 separate rigs. I had to have 2 separate monitor rigs. So we did a pre-production in the UK in London. And the first day we set up the one rig, got it all dialed in, the band rehearsed, got everything set, you know, saved it, broke the whole thing down, set up the next rig for the next day, did the same thing, packed that rig up, you know, and then we went off to the shows. So and like you were just saying, man, so I had 2 sets of in-ears, I had 2 sets of everything. So there's, and at this time too, I had just flown over, I was in between tours, another tour. So I flew over to Europe. I was jet lagged, you know, I was lack of sleep. I'm trying to like do all these things, take care of all these responsibilities, nervous because I'm working with one of my favorite bands, you know? So like all these factors are coming into play. And it was the second show we did. I believe it was in Copenhagen, Denmark, called Copenhell, this metal festival. And it was that situation, man. On the PSM 1000 packs, I believe not the new ones, not the plus ones, but the ones before that, you have the high gain and the standard setting on the packs.
Correct.
On the new packs, the plus ones, I think they all come at gain, high gain already. So on the normal PS10s, you have this the choice. And I remember going through all of them. At least I thought I did. You know, at rehearsal, I thought I had them all right because I had dealt with that issue before. You know, in another gig. So that was one of the things I always look out for. And so we do the show. And the scary thing with Deftones is the bass player and the singer, they want me to plug in their ears into the pack, then tape the pack up with the ears on there because they go crazy and they're like jumping all around stage. So that makes me very nervous to tape their volume into one space because, you know, it could just be little notch here, a little notch there that can make the difference in the way that the mix is sitting in your ears with the volume, you know? Yeah. So taping that volume and not giving that ability to adjust really made me nervous, but they were very adamant about this is the way we do it, this way we want it. And I was like, okay. So that second show, we come out and it's intense, you know? The band, like I said, they're coming, tons of energy. There's crowds going crazy. They come out and right away, Serge, the bass player, he's like, it's quiet. It's quiet. I'm like, what? He's like, turn me up. Turn me up. I'm like, what? What the fuck? What's going on? And I realized, I was like, shit, dude. And the first thing I thought was like, is this pack on high gain? I was like, please say it's on high gain. If it's not, then I don't know what the fuck the problem is. So what to compensate in that moment, I just bumped up his output, you know, just his overall mix send level. And I bumped it up and he's like, okay, good, good, you know? And of course I'm slamming red on the output at this point, but I'm just like, oh fuck. And then it was the fact that in the midst of all the things I was trying to double check on, I just missed his pack on the double, on putting it to high gain instead of standard. And in that moment, it bit me in my ass, you know? But like I said, like, luckily I assumed that's what the problem was. And I just did the next thing that I could just kind of compensate for that. And it worked out in the end. And afterwards, I apologized to him because he was like, what happened, man? I was like, oh, fuck, man, blah, blah, blah. He's like, oh, it's all good.
My bad.
So, yeah. But yeah, man, it's just one of those examples, no matter how, and that's like 6 years into my career, you know, is like, you just never know when something like that will happen. You just always double, triple check always, you know, so.
Double, triple check, man. Yeah, I agree. That's a great advice there, man. Yeah, that's exactly what I would have done. I would have just reshred that output master and bumped it up to give it a boost. Man, that's one of my favorite pieces of gear, the PSM 1000s.
Exactly.
As a monitor engineer.
I love it.
Sure, Axient, all that good stuff. Oof.
At that point, Chris, you could even probably bump up the output of the actual transmitter, you know, that's sending to the ears, the actual level. I'm not sure if there's, I mean, you could do the output.
I feel like the safest one would be with the console. Yeah, the console, exactly. Versus like jumping like 8 dB or whatever that jump is on the transmitters.
For me, man, it always makes me nervous to bump up something in artist mix if you know that it's typically more than they would normally want, because that's the first...
Yeah, because you don't know if it could be like the cable's not all the way in and then it clicks in and then it's
boom,
like...
Boom! Blows out their ears.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I don't do monitors often, but I've done ears once and it was horrifying. Like, I'm going to make someone deaf today if I do the wrong move. If I slip and hit that fader up, I'm going to
be definitely
fucked.
One of the biggest fears.
Yeah, that is nerve. Yeah. That's nerve-wracking. I can't imagine just being the whole show like on edge, like of you know, like hoping of, obviously that I hope it's the pack, but like, wow, what if it's anything else?
Exactly, because the last thing you want to do is blow out your artist's ears, man.
It's not a good day at the office.
That's when I was talking about that console going crazy with the digital feedback. I have my ears, and thankfully I had them around my neck at that point. But if I had them in my ears, I don't know if I'd be able to listen to this conversation today.
Wow. It's crazy, man.
Do you have a favorite favorite console, Matt?
I mean, I got to play on the Avid SXL for the past few years, and I really love that. One thing with Avidesk that I tend to enjoy and I tend to kind of fall into is using plugins, you know? And I try not to overdo it, but obviously when they're there and it's that easy, I kind of, you know, use them. So I know that's one thing. And I definitely don't try to overdo it, but I really found that when I got to use when I got to tour with a Digico for the first time, I got to do a Digico SD8. And I really wanted to just go out on the tour with nothing. I just wanted to use all onboard stuff because I really wanted to take the time to hear how the desk sounds, how it reacts, how it translates to my mixes. Because before that, I was using Profile for the most of my career.
That's a big... Dude, they sound so good.
Yeah,
Digico,
man.
They're
and
amazing.
It's a good jump.
I was sold, man. After that first time, I was like, wow. Yeah. And even the band was like, dude, your mixes sound amazing. I was like... Right, I'm just using all onboard shit too. I'm not doing anything crazy.
Yeah.
So I definitely appreciate Digico. I appreciate the flexibility, the functionality of pretty much all desks these days. You know, I would really love to try the Yamaha PM7, the Rivage series, I think. Or
Rivage.
Yeah, yeah, Rivage. The Rivage. Rivage. Yeah, sorry, the Rivage. I would really love to try those. I really want to try the new the Digico Quantum series desk that allows you to actually make individual adjustments within the mix to specific inputs. That's not going to affect all mixes, you know? Like, that whole idea is just mind-blowing to me.
Dude.
And I can't wait for the day that I'm able to utilize that desk and to, you know, to create mixes having that ability, you know? It's really, for me, like, I really, obviously, my first choices would be Avid or Digico because I have my most experience on those desks. But I would really love to try, like I said, the Yamaha series. And I'd also like to try, I love Midas desks too. I think those sound great. I love certain functionalities of Midas. I love the pop groups. I like that a lot. I think they sound great. They definitely have that sort of saturation analog sort of vibe feel. I started mixing on a PM1000. That was a desk I really learned how to mix on. Not the PM1000, the Midas Heritage 1000, sorry. Midas Heritage 1000. Analog desk. So, but yeah, those are definitely all great desks. And just the way that technology is now, and the functionality of, and the flexibility of digital desks these days, it's great, man. It really does set us up as engineers to succeed in our jobs. And yeah, man, I think it's great. So,
I love it, man. Yeah, I'm the same way. I try not to box myself in with any brand. Mm-hmm. Last year, I actually took out on tour 4 different desks.
Oh, cool.
Every tour was different, you know.
Yeah.
Took out Avid, then Digico, then Allen & Heath, then Midas.
Oh, okay. What about that? I love that Allen & Heath. I remember you hit that, you took that out because I had toured with that back in 2018. I love that desk, man. That I totally forgot to mention that. That desk is awesome.
Dude.
And it is
really
easy to kind of wrap your head around. And it sounds great. Yeah, I would love to play on that desk some more.
Yeah, it's great. Dual touch screens. Mm-hmm. The thing that I really loved about that one is that you can really set it up however you want to set it up. Mm-hmm. And you can grab channels and like move them on the fly. Yeah. There's no
audio interruption, stuff like that.
Audio interruption, exactly. It's got some cool emulations. You can add the Waves card if you want to. Mm-hmm. Recording every night, super easy.
Yeah.
Just little Ethernet cable. Same with Digico too. Yeah, man. I'm a fan of using all the technology. Like,
seriously.
And that too. Like, you just stay sharp if you use several brands. And yeah, I think I would gravitate more towards Avid or Digico too. Mm-hmm. But yeah. I love Midas. Mm. If you have a pre-production day or two.
Same with Digico, though.
Same with Digico, yeah. I think if I had Fly Day or, you know, Throw and Go, right away Avid, second thought.
I think one of the biggest things that I really appreciate and that I really got to utilize on this past tour I was on with Vampire Weekend that I never had before was virtual sound check. And man, that was a game changer for me. Especially with Vampire Weekend, like I was mentioning, they have so many inputs. And me being a new engineer coming in and taking over, it really gave me a peace of mind and an ease of work flow to utilize the that functionality with the desk. It's amazing.
Yeah, because you can really set it up for the day, venue dependent, before the artist even sets foot on stage.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Just be more comfortable and
some consistency
for people that suffer from anxiety like me, maybe you and me. That's a ton of weight off the shoulders, you know, to just be like everything's good before these guys even get here, and makes you feel better.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like if you want to check something and Chris is still setting up, you know, he's not even close to getting dialed in yet, but you really want to check something, boom, you just pull up the file. Recall it.
Yep.
That never happened.
Because Chris is on top of it. I mean, he's always waiting on you, Los. What the hell, bro?
yeah, right. Nah, we work well together, man. Shit.
I feel it, man. I really appreciate about you guys and this show too, man. Because I feel that connection you guys got. And I can only imagine like, being on tour with you guys, that it would just be as much fun as it is here with you guys now. So kudos to
you
guys,
man. We have a good
time. Dude, I hope we get to tour next year, man, at some point. I would love
it.
For sure.
Exactly. For real.
Dude, okay. Before we wrap things up, One more question. What's the best advice that anyone's ever given you? And what's your favorite venue?
Best advice anyone has ever given me was to always own your mistakes. Don't try to like push them off on someone else or throw anyone else under the bus, you know, because it will come back to bite you in the ass. And I learned right away on my first tour that you have to take responsibility for your actions. You have to hold yourself accountable, and that, yeah, just be honest and straight up with your artists, your team, or whoever you're working for or working with. And yeah, just be accountable. And I think that has really lent itself to me and the success of my career and the ability to work with the artists that I've worked with. And yeah, and I think that just creates a level of respect and trust. And I think it's really important, man. And so, yeah, I definitely, it's advice that I've been given, and I would totally give it 1,000 times to anyone that needs to hear it. So, and then my favorite venue in general, I'm trying to think of course, in the U.S., it'd probably be Red Rocks, because growing up in Colorado, spent a lot of time. I've seen a lot of shows at Red Rocks, and it wasn't until last year that I actually got to work a show there for the first time. So that was huge, monumental moment for me.
Got to write your name in the tunnel.
That's right. And we got to do two nights. So that was really fun, man. So we got to walk away after the first night. So that was really cool. And then as far as, I'm trying to think of a European venue or somewhere outside of the States that I've played that I really... it's hard to say. I know it's kind of maybe sounds weird, but I really like playing the Razzmatazz in Barcelona. It's kind of a dingy kind of rock club, and the loading's really wacky, and it's just a weird, but I love that place. I've been there so many times. I love Barcelona. I think it's just the city in general, the vibes, the people, the energy from the crowd is always amazing. So I think that is definitely one of my favorite places to play in Europe. Is I always like going back to the Razzmatazz. Most people won't agree with me, but
so that's so awesome. Yeah. No, that's a good personal one. I love to hear that. Something outside of the normal.
And I just love Spain too. Nothing's better than Spain.
It's amazing, man.
That's such a fun place to tour.
Yeah, real quick, back in 2008, I was touring with a Latin artist, Luis Miguel, and we did like 2 weeks in Spain, just of Spain. And that was amazing. It was the best like 2 weeks of my summer I had in a long time, because we traveled to so many different cities. I'd never been in Spain. We traveled to the south of Spain, which was gorgeous, man. Mallorca, yeah. Sevilla.
Granada.
Yeah. It was amazing, man. I mean, the scenery, the people, the food, everything was amazing.
Dude, so. the food. Oh, my gosh.
You know this. So yeah, that's what's up. Big props to Spain,
dude. I loved having you on, man.
Yeah, man,
so good to see you and chat it up, catch up.
Yeah, it was great to meet you.
Yeah,
man,
Chris,
awesome.
Thank you, Carlos, thank you so much for having me, guys. I'm very grateful to be here and to share this with you, and yeah, man, thanks again.
Of course, brother. So nice to connect, man. And fucking check out the Dirty Decibel. If you like the show, you'll definitely like Matt's show, The Dirty Decibel, man.
Oh, yeah. Well, definitely, I'll have to get you guys on here on the show again sometime soon and just talk some shit. Yeah. So,
hell yeah.
Thanks again, man.
Love that. Big love, man. Yeah, thanks for coming on. Chris, you want to add anything? Last words?
Hire Matt.
Boom.
Boom!
Anyone in the LA area needing a... amazing audio engineer,
or maybe a friend, you know?
There you go. I'm here.
Boom.
Thank
awesome,
thank
dude.
You. Appreciate it.
All right, we'll see you guys next week.
Hi, man. Peace out.
Thanks for tuning in. Peace out. Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. Remember to give us a like, subscribe, and a follow on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and on Instagram @StageRightPodcast.